Upstate New York, Women in Film and Television and the Linda WAMC's Performing Arts Center will present a screening of the film Racing Daylight on Friday, the 18th of March at 8 o'clock. The event will feature a conversation with director Nicole Quinn. Afterward, the movie is part of the Real Women in Film series, sponsored by Upwift, which is the
Upstate Women in Film and Television.
Thank you very much, as well as the Linda. Racing Daylight was filmed in the Hudson Valley and features Oscar award-winning Ulster County resident Melissa Leo, as well as Oscar-nominated actor David Strathairn. It is a ghost story, a murder mystery, and a love story which crosses time, and Nicole joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So tell us about this event and how it came about.
Hanna Sofka, who has just become the president of Upstate Women in Film, taking over from Heidi Phillipson, is broadening the Real Women in Film series. I believe we're going to start programming it at Rosendale as well, to include more women filmmakers in the conversation. This film was 10 years old, actually. It took me 6 years to make it, and it's taking 10 years to get onto the next project. But I've been writing for 8 years on to that next project. Real Women in Film is in support of what's happening now in the ACLU, investigations into underemployment of women in Hollywood. And in reaction to that, more and more women's organizations and women's collectives are banding together to show our strength as actual filmmakers.
So when it comes to an event like we're having at the Linda, what do you hope to accomplish out of that?
I think we're just trying to show that more that women do direct films, and that we direct films that have enduring lives, and that we attract actors who want to make films with us, because that's part of the argument in Hollywood is that male actors particularly or Academy Award-winning actors don't like to work with women directors, and it's just not true.
Why is that out there then?
We're not sure. There's a huge question. Meryl Streep has said, why is Hollywood leaving money on the street? Why don't they want our dollars? We don't know. It's intrinsic sexism in the industry.
So then the question, of course, is how do you change it?
You keep making films outside of the system and keep trying to get those films, once they're made, into the system. This film ran on Showtime for 2 years. It's got Women in Film finishing funds. So it actually, we started with $100,000. We started $50,000, got an investor of $50,000, made a film for $100,000, and sold it to as many people who would show it for us.
And the challenges that you run into then are numerous, I assume.
It's always a fluke. When you get something made, you're a fluke. You're an exception. So trying to get a second film made, I have had a script that's circulating around, and I have great actors attached to it, but trying to get it made without making it myself again and investing in it myself again has been arduous.
I was just having this conversation with Lauren Weedman, who is a very funny actress who has written this great book, and I was asking her about kind of the dream of what do you do next? She was in a television series that was canceled, and I said, do you want to be the showrunner? And she said, yeah, I want to be the person on the couch. I want to be the writer, the director, and the star.
Absolutely.
And I said, so what's wrong with that? And she said, well, they won't let me.
Well, you have to do it yourself. So right now, I've written a book. I've written a trilogy of feminist dystopian fantasies. We call it lovingly Game of Stones, as opposed to the misogynistic version of the Game of Thrones. It is a female hero's journey. It's action adventure without guns. The books are great. I have over 9,500 Facebook fans, and we've written the scripts now, and Melissa has signed on to play a character. And so we're gunning again. And it's actually a really good time for us to be coming forth with a series, because the industry realizes they have to do something quickly, and hopefully we'll be on their radar.
Do you think it's going to come together where the system realizes that it has been exclusionary to women, to minorities, to great swaths of the population?
I think it will have to at this point. In the 1990s, there was a big push from the ACLU. There was a big push to increase the numbers of women in Hollywood. And then once those numbers were sort of quotized and I filled three EEOC spots while I wrote in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Woman of color over 40. And those are three distinct barriers. And when you're in an agent's drawer, that's the subset. Unless they're asking for those three, you're making deals on your own and trying to get your projects made on your own. I mean, I wrote for Jodie Foster. I wrote for Don Singleton. And none of those projects had a shot at being made, actually, because they really were just giving sort of lip service to while we're hiring these people. But
does good count? It doesn't seem that good always counts.
No, I don't think it does. I mean, 2% of all films that are made gain distribution, and that's generally speaking. So there's that leaves a huge amount of work not being seen.
But the work that is being seen, there's a lot of it that's just crap.
It's formulaic. They quit all. I'm supposed to not talk about this. Well, anyway, I would recommend people look at the TV writers settlement. There was a class action suit many years ago when the Writers Guild and the writers got together because they realized that writers over 40 were being quit wholesale by their agencies and not being hired by networks and studios. Huge settlements were made. There's a whole foundation set up to support it. So what you're seeing is a conversation of young white men under 40. It's like stockbrokers. If you don't go to Wall Street, where you're, you know, snorting coke off the belly of a model, you go to Hollywood and you snort coke off the belly of a starlet.
If you're a 52-year-old male trying to write, you have difficulty as well.
Absolutely, unless you've already cracked the A-list and you're there for a while, and then you're infrastructure. So of course you're dependable. And I mean, John Sayles does a lot of rewrites, and he's a great writer, but he's a stalwart. He's a go-to. You know, there's an A-list of rewriters you go to, and there are very few, if there are any women on it. I don't think so.
So for organizations like yours, give me an idea of the mission of what you say, okay, this is what we're going to accomplish as a group.
Well, honestly, I would say the WIFT, the Women in Film and Television, is a pretty old organization.
Yes.
UpWIFT is a new chapter of it. I'm a member of NYWIFT originally, and UpWIFT is beginning to grow its base here in the Hudson Valley. I'm also a member of an organization called the Film Fatales, which is an organization of women directors that have just banded together under the auspices of a director named Leah Meyerhoff, who started having dinners once a month in her house with other people who were filmmakers, also women, to form a network to support each other. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of us worldwide. And what we're doing as a form of advocacy is making ourselves known, is getting our films out there as often as possible, making a resurgence of films just to show that this is deep pockets. We didn't start yesterday. We've been here.
We do know that there's an audience for it.
Yes, we do. I program for the Rosendale Theater. Mm-hmm. Our comfort zone is generally women 45 to 65, is as big a bang at the box office as 18 to 24-year-old guys, which is what's being programmed now. Except it's actually a bigger market because women, if they like a film, will come back and they'll bring a friend. And if they really like a film, they'll buy it in ancillary markets. And the young boys aren't doing that. So it's actually a big, huge economic slush pile that's being left behind.
And I know, I mean, we have a similar conversation when it comes to journalism. It's like, well, okay, so there are like this, you know, four people who are doing real news and people go to that and they accept it. And those people make money. And then you wonder, well, why are more people not doing real journalism? Instead of all the other stuff. So right. I guess, I asked the same question to you. If there's a market there and there's money to be made, why do you think there is an industry that's saying, yeah, you know, we could make money doing this?
I think it's a dinosaur that's holding on. I really don't. I don't see that it will survive this way. I think it's really hard when you're considering that motion picture theaters themselves are showing film on DCP, and Hollywood just signed a new contract with Kodak to make films on films, which they then have to turn into DCP because no theater in the United States still shows 35 except as a specialty market. So you have this weird economic structure that doesn't make sense. It doesn't bear itself out anymore. Friends of mine are working in development in Hollywood, and they're saying it's harder and harder to get a film made because everybody wants a risk, is so risk averse they don't want to fail. But, you know, it's the art and artistry. How do you balance art and commerce? You have to take a few risks.
So one of the things that and I don't know, when I look at what is out there, what is, if you walk into your area Cineplex and you just look up and see everything that's playing, to me, and I don't know if this is, so is this an old guy thing where you just like, you look up and you say, everything looks alike. Like, I've seen this a million times.
On this programming end, I mean, I'm also a member of the Writers Guild, and this year I was in the SAG nominating committee, so I saw everything.
Yeah.
And it really does distill down to this small little puddle of who's going to run it. Which film has enough money to run the I'm running for high school president campaign, and which ones actually have merit. Sometimes there are a lot of Emperor's New Clothes that get pushed on the audience, and we go, and we see them, and we think, it was okay, but it was saturated, it was watered down, it was made to be palpable for a larger segment of the population. So I'm more interested in niche programming myself, and I feel like my niche is women, 51% of the population, 6% of the history. So it's the same skew. I mean, if you look at your history books, it's 6% women, but we were there.
Yes.
You know, so,
and had a lot to do with it.
Exactly. Actually, I always think, honestly, that women's history is the fabric, the warp and weft, the fabric of society and civilization. And male history are like the puncture holes and the bloodstains across it. You know, what can you do to rent and tear what's working? Which is, you know, why ecology's been feminized and it's been kind of jumped into that same, we don't have to respect because it's a woman. And you hear Donald Trump talking about women. Bimbo's dumb. She wouldn't be a tent. Who cares what you think about us? And yet that becomes the conscious rhetoric, and that rhetoric spins and seems groovy. So that's what happens to our movies. That's what happens to our infotainment. That's why there's no news.
Yeah.
The Truth, that movie that came out this year, explained it to us. Dan Rather was the first one who made a profit doing news with 60 Minutes, and that's the day it changed. It's the day everything changed in terms of investigative journalism and our need and our mandate, according to the Constitution, why there is the press, freedom of the press, is to do that kind of investigative work. And that's,
so there is a checks and balances.
Exactly, and that's gone. I mean, there are those four. I mean, Moyers, who's unimpeachable, or, you know, any of those people that that you kind of go to and you think, oh, what happens when you're gone?
Right.
Then I'm worried.
So are you optimistic?
Well, yeah, I'm an artist. I just keep creating. I just keep making my own things happen. And I think that that's...
But it's got to be a pain at some point.
It's like, really a pain. It's really a pain. When you made something credible that's lasting that, you know, still... I mean, I'm still on Snag and Fandor with this film. But I went the book route because it was a much more tangible smack it on the table. And now I'm puffing those projects up because it will... It has a legacy that's longer than just a script.
You're going to have a conversation after the film. Who's on that?
I believe Heidi Phillipson is the interviewer.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So it's the event is Friday. This Friday at 8:00, and it is the Upstate New York Women in Film and Television, and the Linda WMC's Performing Arts Studio presenting a screening of the film Racing Daylight on Friday, March 18th at 8:00. And you can find that information by going to upwift.org, upwift, U-P-W-I-F-T, upwift.org. And you can also go to thelinda.org and find information there. Links to both are shared at wamc.org/roundtable. And what else do you have?
I just have a little laundry list. The Rosendale Theater is world premiering Dear President Obama by director John Bauermaster tonight.
Yep.
With Mark Ruffalo is narrating. John will be there tonight. We're showing it tonight and tomorrow night.
Great.
Actors and writers, we're premiering Wednesday's Child by playwright Mark St. Germain at the Unison on March 26th. Then I'm participating in the Woodstock Writers Festival Story Slam on April 7th at 7:30. Pretty exciting. I love that they've made writing and written words, spoken word, sexy again. I think it's so cool. And that's me.
That's good stuff. And again, of course, the film Friday night, March 18th, it is Racing Daylight. 8 o'clock at the Linda, and you can find out more by going to upwift.org or thelinda.org. Nicole Quinn, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.